This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And in the original land of self-made wealth, America, strike it rich, America, we consider the price of coasting. Do you have a price of coasting? What would it take to take the pressure off of you to make it feel all downhill? Back in the 1950s, there was a real easy answer to that.
My name is Michael Anthony, and for many years I was executive secretary to John Beresford Tipton, the multi-billionaire, whose charity was as boundless as it was mysterious. For it was his hobby to give away, anonymously and tax-free, $1 million apiece to various people he never knew.
The millionaire TV show, every struggling play-by-the-rules American could relate to some guy in a suit coming to the door with a check for $1 million. And that still holds even for some people today.
My name is Don from Bedford, Texas, and the amount of money that would make me feel rich is $1 million.
$1 million!
An even number which says I'm a millionaire.
All right, Don. Still six zeros there for Don. In self-made wealth America, the prototypical millionaire for years was the frugal blue-collar type who squirreled it away quietly and slowly and ended up with a surprise few million in the bank, a house all paid off, whose only ostentatious mannerism was a very green lawn cared for on a shiny top-of-the-line riding lawnmower. I love that guy. I just wish he wouldn't work on Saturdays. You know him. But America has changed a lot. Personal income has stalled for a generation in the U.S. Playing by the rules is more often seen as a game for suckers. And the once orderly pass down of inheritance, even within the middle class, is mostly gone. The millionaires of America today are a hodgepodge of hard work, good fortune, and inspired entrepreneurial ideas. And there are apparently a lot of them. New figures from the market research group, the Spectrum Group, put the number of American households with a net worth of more than $1 million at 10 million. That's a new high. The other big change is that $1 million apparently doesn't feel like $1 million anymore. I'm joined by Ron Lieber. He's the Your Money columnist for our partner, The New York Times. He's the author of The Opposite of Spoiled, a book about teaching kids about money and values. Ron, welcome back to The Takeaway.
It's nice to be back.
So let's talk about $1 million and how it doesn't really feel rich in the way that it did in the 1950s when they were handing out checks on the TV show.
Well, here's one way to think about it. If you're a retired person or approaching retirement, you got to think about what that's going to do for you over possibly 30 years that you may still be alive. You know, the standard financial planning practice suggests that you can yank maybe 4% of that each year. So you got $40,000 coming to you. You probably got to pay taxes on that, depending on what kind of retirement account it comes from. And then maybe you're getting some Social Security too. So depending on where you live, this might be enough for, you know, a decent retirement, but it's probably not enough to make you feel rich when you take it out each and every month.
And $1 million in Paris, France is a little different than $1 million in Paris, Texas. In this survey, who are the millionaires?
Well, here's something to think about when it comes to these millionaires and when it comes to thinking about surveys,
right?
So here, you know, we're talking about people who have self-reported their millionaire status. Many of them are trying to put a value on small businesses that they don't intend to sell.
So it's not in cash.
It's not in cash. It may well be the valuation of something that you own. For some of them, it may be cash, right? But you know, here's the thing about this. We always think about millionaires, people who have become millionaires, as people who have taken a lot of risk. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, one thing about these millionaires is that while they may say that they are interested in taking more risk in the future, they may not have taken all that much risk in the past. They may have been slow and steady savers over 20 or 30 or 40 years, gotten lucky in real estate, and they just slowly socked it away. They caught, you know, the market updraft the last 6 or 7 years, and all of a sudden they find themselves millionaires. And it wasn't because they took a big risk. It was because they got lucky to have saved at the right time, and they got lucky that they didn't have to break into that nest egg for some health disaster or a long-term period of unemployment.
Is the era of the millionaire next door, that book from the 90s, the author of whom just died, is that era over?
No, I don't believe it's over. Again, I think you need a lot of luck to be able to save consistently for 20 or 30 or 40 years and not have to bust into it for some healthcare calamity or a period of unemployment or an economic moment that wipes out your small business. But it is still the case that there are all sorts of ways in, you know, relatively unglamorous industries like the one that those two authors describe to become a millionaire by building a business and doing things that can't be stolen by an app or a website or can't be done by somebody in China. You can still have a plumbing business. You can have a plumbing supply business, or from owning a couple body shops. I mean, these are all things that we still need and that cannot be outsourced.
And this survey suggests that even the well-off aren't terribly candid when it comes to telling their kids about how much money they have.
Only 40% of the people in this survey tell their kids their income. 62% eventually tell them the net worth, but that's often when they're adults. And when you ask them why, fully a third of them say that it's none of their business. This is a terrible thing to say. First of all, it's not true, right? If you're in the family, its revenues and expenses are your business. They impact you, right? You can't tell kids that. But the other thing that makes it a problem is if you say that to children, they will come to the conclusion that this matter of great import and mystery and power, money, is an off-limits subject, that they are not to come to you on that. And maybe they conclude that they're not to come to you about sex or drugs or mental health or other important things too. Do not say that to your children.
Do you have a number that would make you comfortable?
Is that today?
Today.
And comfortable to walk away from my job, which I don't think I would do because I like it too much?
Right.
I got to do that math in my head.
Actual math. I'm impressed.
I think my number is about $10
million. $10 million. My wife says $7 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about, all right, what would $10 million a year throw off in interest? And, you know, right now interest rates are pretty low. So you've got to think about dividends from stocks. And I'm thinking, okay, well, $10 million might throw off, you know, $300,000-$400,000 a year if I'm lucky. I got to pay some taxes on that. I don't really want to bust into the principal if I'm going to need it for another 50 years because, you know, I'm only in my 40s. So I think that's about it.
So what's your lottery number out there? Call us at 877-8-MINDTAKER. Post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Rod Lever, author of The Opposite of Spoiled, a book about teaching kids about money and values. He's the Your Money columnist for The New York Times, our partner. Thanks so much, Ron.
Thank you.